You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Congrats, Dallas.
Yeah. I just figured we should, now that the World Cup is here, we should go ahead and reminisce.
Let's revisit that day.
On that wonderful day.
Let's revisit that day where someone told us we were not allowed to blow out a break for the biggest announcement in sports history in this town. And then we missed it. Dallas.
Dallas.
That's a great Facebook memory.
Oh, my God. And remember that woman? She's like, wow. And there's like 2,000 kids that like soccer in Dallas.
Kids play soccer there.
Oh, my God. She was awful. Awesome. God bless her. God bless her.
Oh, well, here we are 4 years later.
Still talking about it.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff. The Curaçaoans, by the way, somebody on the text line said, where is Curaçao? It is a small island nation on the northern edge of South America.
One of the three ABC islands.
Oh. Aruba, Jamaica.
Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao.
Mm.
Used to be known as the Netherland Antilles.
Thank you, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
That is fascinating.
Within the last hour, it is confirmed a plane full of Curaçaoans have landed in Kansas City ahead of this weekend's match.
I love it.
There's going to be two more charter flights coming, one tomorrow and then one Saturday.
And by the way, Saturday, 7 p.m. Is Ecuador versus Curaçao. And we made this announcement earlier, but I think it bears repeating. Prior to Saturday, and then after Saturday, prior to the next match, which is next Thursday, please continue to support downtown businesses and businesses in the Crossroads and businesses in the West Bottoms. Everyone is open for business. I don't want people thinking, well, it's just so crowded because of the World Cup. I mean, do we have visitors in town? Absolutely. But is it so bad on the days that we're not seeing an actual match that you can't go in and have coffee or have dinner somewhere? Absolutely not. Please continue to support our businesses.
Here's the deal. There are more people here. Traffic might be a little more congested. We may, I'm just being honest, have overhyped it a little bit, and that's why people are now, for whatever reason, afraid to go out and about. If you do want to go out and about, just do it and be flexible. If you want to go to a coffee shop in Midtown and you can't get to it because the traffic's too bad, guess what? There's another coffee shop nearby that you can probably get to.
Please continue supporting our downtown businesses.
They need it.
By the way, gas prices have fallen below $4 a gallon for the first time in nearly 3 months. Happened today for the first time in 3 months after surging global oil prices shot up amid the war in Iran. The national average for a gallon dropped to $3.99, the lowest since March 30th, according to AAA. It is, and I feel the pain and that pinch for all of you. It has been so long since I've been to a gas station. And look, I've got my own
bragger.
I got my own issues. The Tesla doesn't fix everything. I cannot remember the last time I was at a gas station for gas. It would be 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, you have to pay for other things when it comes to the Tesla, and I understand that. But I am sorry for those of you. My daughter drives an SUV. It is a shocking amount of money.
Try driving a pickup truck.
To fill that up with gas.
I'm just going to air this one out because it continues to frustrate me. And whenever gas prices go up, so whenever the per barrel price goes up, gas prices skyrocket immediately. The argument being because you're paying for the refill rate for what it's going to cost that gas station to refill the tanks underground. So when the barrel price drops to $80 like it did yesterday, why don't the prices drop immediately? Because we're paying for the refill rate for how much it's going to cost to refill the tank. The logic applies one way, but doesn't apply the other.
You could drive an EV.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Listen to this story. Kansas City says it is planning facial recognition on its buses as privacy advocates raise concerns. This afternoon from Channel 5. Officials in Kansas City are preparing to equip some public buses with facial rec. The cameras would be capable of detecting whether or not you appear on a list of either banned riders, that's number one, wait, Sam, or missing persons. I really like number two, if we have a silver alert, which is about every damn day, where some sweet Edith is missing and family can't find her, and she was last seen wandering around downtown, this would be one way that you could pretty quickly identify someone who is at risk.
Are you trying to make me go doomsday surveillance state right now?
Supporters and opponents alike view the effort as a major litmus test for tapping the AI-powered software on a United States public transportation system. It would position Kansas City as the latest epicenter in a fierce debate over whether the safety benefits of AI are worth the privacy costs. And I would ask you, what privacy right do you have on a public bus operating on public streets? I think the answer is you don't.
That is true. You do not have a right to privacy. It's not the right to privacy that's the concern. It's what happens when they take it a step further.
Where's the data go?
It's the same conversation with the Flock cameras. When you implement these policies, when you implement this technology, you do have to consider the doomsday side of it. So if you welcome facial recognition in the name of security onto public transit, when do they then transition that into using that facial recognition to limit your travel? Which, by the way, is one of the foundations of freedom, is being able to travel freely.
Not if you're wanted for murder.
Well, if you're wanted for murder, you're probably not taking the bus down to the grocery store.
I think you would be surprised, Sam.
Okay.
Phone's already ringing. 913-586-7798. I am not a frequent flyer with respect to public transportation, only because I don't live or work downtown. I don't live or work somewhere it would be extremely useful to us. We go down to Union Station quite a bit, tool around down at Union Station, hop on the streetcar, maybe go check out Bowling's in the River Market. We do that quite a bit, but I don't use public transportation enough and I'm concerned about privacy things, but personally, this is probably not going to affect me much, but it might affect a whole lot of you. And what do you think about it? Like, they will tell you when you get into an Uber, this driver is recording.
Oh, for sure.
Every time that that's happened.
Which, that's their vehicle. They have a right to record what happens for liabilities reasons in their own vehicle. On a public bus, you're utilizing that service. They have a right to have cameras in there. It's when you take it that step further and you say, we're going to be using facial recognition to decide whether or not you get to ride the bus that day. Because that's effectively what they're doing.
Well, but why would they bar you from riding the bus? If it's being used to ban criminals or people who have behaved extremely badly, criminally or otherwise, on a bus, I think most people would be like, yeah, kick them off. If it's being used to find an elderly person for whom there is a silver alert, I think most people would be like, that's a great use of technology. Why else would they ban you from riding?
These things tend to happen in a slippery slope.
Slow
effect.
Drip. Slow drip.
Right. Where the more that we welcome, the more that they want to do. So first, it's, okay, well, if we recognize that you're a person of interest in a murder, you can't ride the bus. Then it's, oh, well, you actually owe us for 3 parking tickets. You can't ride the bus. Or we talk about it all the time. How can we limit people's access to things because they don't pay their child support? Should they not be allowed to ride the bus if they don't pay their child support?
Is it Argentina that's already doing that, or Algeria? I'm trying
Argentina
to remember.
Argentina with their safe stands protocol.
Yes,
yeah.
Where they will bar people or arrest people wanted for crimes who try to get into a World Cup match. Listen to this from Jay Stanley, a senior policy analyst for the Project on Speech, Privacy, and Technology at ACLU. The idea of running face rec on a camera that is pointed on live spaces in public is a line that until recently has never really been crossed in the last 25 years. And privacy is a tricky thing. The state of Missouri, by the way, declined to help fund the project, expected due to concerns with that facial recognition component. Still, despite that, the city is pushing ahead with local and federal money. That is according to the Kansas City Transportation Authority. The phone's already ringing. Do you like this? Do you hate it? If you knew you were being recorded, would you care?
And,
we are like the most surveilled society during this time on public streets, in elevators. Look this up when we get back, Sam. What is the average number of times an American is captured on security cameras or surveillance per day? It's a mind-blowing number.
Not to mention the issues with facial recognition and their recognition.
Especially with people of color. Yeah. You're absolutely right. 913-586-7798. We will take your calls straight ahead on Dana and Parks. Real quick, and thank God for Facial Rec with respect to this nutbag. They are still looking, and this is an active threat alert for the psycho who opened fire on all of these random people in Kansas City yesterday on 670, on I-70, struck an Uber driver who was trying to get soccer fans into town. And then this afternoon, Sam, this from the KCK Police Department, because they are looking for this guy. There's been like two Operation 100s that have not led to his capture on the Missouri side. Kansas City, Kansas posted this on June 11th, so a week ago, at approximately 6:26, a vehicle occupied by an adult and a child was struck by gunfire at 7th and Metropolitan. They interviewed witnesses. They looked at technological resources. They tracked the suspect's movements through, like, the cameras on the...
The Flock system.
Yeah, the Flock system. And positively identified both the suspect and his residence. When they looked later at the Kansas City, Missouri case, they believe it is the same man.
And you had mentioned those two Operation 100s, one of them an address on Brookside Avenue in Independence. That was an overnight standoff that eventually resulted in the home being on fire. Crews were able to put the fire out. Police went in. Suspect was nowhere to be found. Later that day, they were led to a home in Kansas City off of Kensington. A couple hour standoff there. Went in. He wasn't there. They're still looking for the guy. He is responsible for a number of five separate shootings, allegedly.
They are saying do not approach, call 911 immediately. It is all over social. His mugshot is all over social. He is clearly considered armed and dangerous. And he has one of those weird razor things cut out of his eyebrows, which I don't understand that. But one has died. The four that were initially shot in Kansas City, Missouri, one has died.
Oh, there's five total. One has died, four wounded, expected to
God.
Be okay.
Well, now the KCK case. Let's go in to Jonathan in Kansas City to continue our facial wreck discussion. Jonathan, I always want this for the bad guys, but you have to ask, what does this mean for the good guys?
Do you know where can you go in 2026 where you're not being reported in public? I follow somebody on YouTube. His name is Kansas City Accountability. He goes out in public, on public sidewalks, and he records in public in front of businesses, and people will still get upset, and they'll call the cops on him.
Yeah, but is he just an agitator, Jonathan? That sounds like he's trying to get a rise out of people for clicks.
No, actually, he doesn't. If you go and watch his videos, he doesn't. As some people actually knows who he is and appreciates what he does. He does it for the amendment. So
what amendment, Jonathan?
Five amendments.
Okay. Thank you for the call. The average American is captured on camera an estimated 34 to 75 times per day.
And when surveyed, more than 70% of Americans guessed they were only filmed less than 9.
Oh, it's way north of 9. And I'll tell you this. Do you have the right on a public street to go stick a camera in somebody's face? You do.
You also have a right for them to react.
I really question somebody's motives who's doing that. And not exactly what we're talking about here, but you do have the right to do that.
The biggest culprit for you appearing on cameras is your commute into work. You're far more likely to be caught on camera between traffic cameras, toll readers, automated license plate readers. These are the Flock systems that we're talking about.
Okay.
It also mentions dashboard cameras from other cars.
Oh, yeah. They've broken this down.
The average employee walks past a camera 8 times a day at work.
Oh, good God. Someone just texted me, Dana, that guy he's talking about is absolutely solely an agitator.
Yeah.
And claims to be a First Amendment auditor. Who are you auditing? People who've done nothing wrong walking downtown trying to get to a restaurant? What is your point? The point is he's being a jerk and he's trying to get a rise out of people.
I was confused by the five amendments response.
He's trying to say this is a First Amendment issue, and I don't get it. Anyway, they have broken down where we are most often captured, and here it is. Number one, while driving, with an average of 23 times per day. The most frequent captures happen on the road, generated by traffic cameras, intersection monitors, and automatic license plate readers. That's number one. At work, that is number two, 8 times per day, 40 times per week. Standard office, retail, and building security systems track the comings and goings in second place work. In third place, while shopping, supermarkets, convenience stores, coffee shops, using multiple cameras for security and operational monitoring. This says 3 times a day. Depends on how many errands you're running. And then finally, neighborhood and doorbell cameras. An average 2 times per day. I would remind you, if you are a delivery person, an Amazon driver, oh my gosh, U.S. postal carrier, UPS, any of that. How many times a day are those folks on camera? It's hundreds, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. Let's go to Clay in Kansas City. Hi, Clay.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, good. Go ahead.
I wanted to get in on the flock thing. USA versus Jones was a Supreme Court case back in 2008 that says the government can't warrantlessly track you with a device that logs your movements. Well, that's what a flock camera is, except it's a privatized company that's doing it now. So they have all the information, and they're putting in you in a database that you can't be in, USA versus Jones. But that's where I draw the line with that, is because it's a warrantless search. The police just put in an investigation on the program, and they can track anybody. That's why they got so many mishandled cases right now across the United States.
Yeah, Clay, that's a great point. I looked it up, and you're sort of right, yes, and sort of not right. United States versus Jones is the U.S. Supreme Court case where they unanimously ruled that police attaching a GPS tracking device to a suspect's car and monitoring the car's movements without a valid warrant constitutes an unlawful search under the Fourth Amendment. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But police cannot physically put a tracking device on your car and be like, let's just see where Sam goes all the day because we think he's a ne'er-do-well.
As we know about Supreme Court rulings, though, they're not about the case themselves, but about the precedent. So would
Correct.
That not expand to flock? Would that not expand to facial recognition cameras on buses?
No, because you don't have a right to privacy on a public street. You do have a right to not have your car searched and your movements tracked with a physical device police are putting on your car without a warrant.
I'm hard-pressed to find the difference between them tracking you through a series of cameras. Those are physical devices that are put up around town and putting a tracker on your car.
Okay, let's look at it a different way. If they wanted to know where Sam Stevie was going throughout the day, and we want to track him from Lawrence to Kansas City to where he's going grocery shopping, back to home, we think he's murdered someone, they would still have to get a warrant to download all of that information. They can't just log on and be like, where's Sam?
Oh, no, they most certainly, that's what they're doing. When they have a suspect vehicle, they are tracking it through that flock system with no warrant. That's exactly what he's talking about, and that's why it would be against that Supreme Court case.
Well, but it's a private company.
Does
that make a difference? I'm asking.
The police department is kind of finding the loophole by using a private company. Mm-hmm. So they're going and saying, and as I've mentioned a couple times, one of the main investors in this company described it as the scene that you see in Hollywood. When they're going from screen to screen, camera to camera, tracking you across the city, if they think that you've done something wrong or, maybe they broke up with an officer.
That's what I was just going to say.
They're
going to
track
where,
you all across the city for no reason with no warrant.
And someone who does that should go to jail. We talked about that case yesterday, and Clay, you're absolutely right, where there have been law enforcement officers who have used this to stalk people, to stalk an ex with whom they disagree, to stalk the boyfriend of an ex-wife. You should go to jail for that.
From the text line, is it about time we all read 1984 again?
Oh, I've been saying that for years. 913-586-7798. We'll take more of your calls straight ahead on Dana and Parks. Couple quick notes. Tomorrow is Juneteenth. That is a federal holiday. Banks will be closed. I'm just reminding you.
We'll still be here.
We will be here,
yep,
Sam.
We will.
It is an Odyssey company holiday, but we will be here.
And have your grievances ready. 5 p.m. tomorrow, Festivus Friday.
We will air the grievances.
Get it off your chest.
I want to wrap up with one thing because Clay brought up a great point with the United States versus Jones as it applies to flock cameras. If you missed it, U.S. v. Jones stated that attaching a GPS tracker to a car, a physical tracker, also to a tractor, constitutes a search requiring a warrant. It was a unanimous decision by the U.S. Supreme Court that you cannot do, police cannot slap a GPS tracker on your car because they think you're a murderer. They got to have a warrant. The government argues that because flock cameras typically operate in plain sight on public thoroughfares, capturing data that is generally visible to any passerby, there is no reasonable expectation of privacy in your public movements. However, to Clay's point and to Sam's point, privacy groups and evolving case law argue that when law enforcement stitches together data from thousands of scattered cameras, they can theoretically reconstruct your entire life and movements over weeks or months. And civil rights advocates contend it is circumventing the Jones case. And it's a great point.
And again, we operate under the precedent of Supreme Court decisions, not the specific case.
But someone has to prove, Sam, those two things are the same. And that's why they're battling that out in court. Is it the same? I could argue it both ways.
Oh, I hope somebody takes flock to the Supreme Court.
Oh, it will.
That would be a very interesting case.
It'll end up there without question. All right, I teased this earlier. We're going to talk about it. The death of the dressing room. I don't shop in fancy schmancy stores, and I don't wear a size zero, so I have no idea what store this is or whether we have one in town.
Okay.
But for the purpose of our discussion, this store is called Brandy Melville.
Yes.
Brandy Melville.
And if you have one in Western
Yes,
County.
I'm sure they do. If you look up Brandy Melville, apparently this is a store that sells very expensive, extraordinarily tiny strips of clothing for the size zero set as they head off to, club or Pilates. I have no idea. But that's what the store is called. They have not announced, but it has leaked out that this store has permanently decided to close all of its dressing rooms across the entire United States. They have quietly shuttered their in-store fitting rooms in every location, sparking intense backlash on social media. While the company has not made a public statement about it, employees have leaked that the closures are a response to privacy issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about that in a minute. Vandalism.
Oh.
And the biggest one?
Theft. Yep.
The brand has not officially commented on the removal of its changing rooms. Women who aren't thieves are furious.
Wow, ma'am, you came in here and you had a really thin waist, and now all of a sudden it looks like you're pregnant.
Looks like you're very puffy in the middle,
Madge. How'd you get pregnant in the dressing
What's
room?
What's going on with that? Despite ongoing controversies, the company continues to expand. A new suburban Chicago location is slated to open. Here's the interesting thing. Do you have the right to try on the stuff before you buy it? If the store has a restrictive return policy, it's a private company.
Do you have a right to? Most certainly not. It's going to benefit them to allow you to, because if you go in there and you buy a size, medium, and you take it home and you realize, well, darn it, I'm actually a large or a small, and they won't let you take it back to exchange it, I can guarantee you that particular shopper is not going to be returning to that establishment.
But we shop all the time on Amazon and have something come to our door without ever trying it on. I've barred my children ordering swimsuits, most clothing, and certainly shoes from Amazon. It never works.
And the way most people do it is they'll order like four different sizes and just send back the three that
also
didn't
not okay.
Fit. Yeah.
So listen to this. I looked it up. Loss prevention data indicates that dressing rooms account for roughly what percent of total retail inventory shrinkage? That's a fancy word for people who are stealing stuff. Mm-hmm. What percent, if you had to guess, Sam?
For standard retail, like clothes,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to go 18%.
23%. Oh. You're close. 23%. While there is no single universally agreed on percentage of all national shoplifting incidents occurring exclusively in fitting rooms, industry sources highlight several critical factors regarding this specific type of theft. Tag removal, a significant portion of fitting room theft involves shoppers actively stripping away the EAS, the electronic article surveillance tags, and then leaving them hidden between benches or mirrors to evade front door alarm systems.
They don't even hide them. They just leave them right on the seat.
Professional thieves frequently use fitting rooms as staging areas, stripping thousands of dollars in merchandise in one single visit. So, you know, what they have now in most stores that still have a dressing room is you get that little, it's always a very bright green or red tag, and it's plastic.
Yeah.
And it's the size of a cell phone, a little bit bigger. And it says 5 on it or 7 on it.
How many for the, items
the
you're taking
items
in.
Of clothing. Yeah. And there's always a woman standing there, and she looks at what you're trying on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You take the tag. You take it back. You have to bring the clothes back. She counts the clothes. You give back the tag. In no other realm of society do you ever see that plastic tag with a number on it. That right. is a uniquely dressing room thing. But apparently that's not working well enough for some stores. And would you shop somewhere without a dressing room? I don't know.
I'm very much pro dressing room just because I'm oddly shaped. There are some XL shirts that fit me and others that look like a crop top. There are some 2Xs that fit me and others that look like I'm wearing a giant trash bag. So the ability to go in and try it on is great, but I don't know if it would change whether or not I would shop at that store, whether or not they had a dressing room, because I'm finding more and more that stores just don't have them. You go to the run-of-the-mill Kohl's or JCPenney's if you can find one still, and they have them. But if you go into a smaller store and you're looking for more niche items, like a shirt with a cool design or something like that, the odds of them having a dressing room are slim.
Someone posted on Reddit at one point, you guys, this is crazy, all of the tags that they found pulled off of the clothing items, like in one shift, whatever. And it is, just looking at it, probably 50 tags.
From the text line, how do people get those tag things off? Do they take a chainsaw into the changing room?
Yeah, right? I can never get those things off if someone forgets.
I am not going to broadcast to you how to do it, but there are ways.
If you're a ne'er-do-well, you know. 913-586-7798. We'll wrap up things on Dana and Parks right after this. Stay with us. I just now am understanding the BBC did a story on this today as well. Why I've never heard of Brandy Melville, which some call Brandy Hellville. There was a 2024 HBO documentary on it called Brandy Hellville and the Cult of Fast Fashion, which accused the retailer of promoting eating disorders and sexualizing its young female employees because the store only sells one size. And that size is teeny McTeeny teeny weeny. Let's go to Chris in Overland Park. Oh, hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. I was just in Chicago with my daughter, and Brandy Melville was a store that she's always wanted to go to. And it's a one size fits all type of a place, which I think.
But that's
was
crazy.
The reason why we were so upset that they didn't have a dressing room that she could try stuff on at.
Oh wait, did they already had shuttered the dressing rooms when you went?
Yes, yeah. We were just there on Monday.
I read somewhere where girls are putting clothing over their clothes or trying to try stuff on in creative ways.
Exactly. What they do is they all wear dresses or skirts so that they can come and try on the sweats and the jeans and stuff. So that they just slide it on in.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's wild.
Was it expensive, Chris? I'm curious.
It actually was not that expensive. I think she got two pairs of sweats and a sweatshirt for like $100, something like that. It wasn't super expensive, but it's not like Walmart brand stuff. But yeah,
and one size fits all. In what world does that make sense? I mean, I'm just, you know, girls got enough problems going on in their lives right now.
What do you mean by not Walmart stuff, Chris?
Stores in... No, he meant good quality, not as expensive.
I know.
The stores are in New York City right now, Boston, and Austin. And man, they just took them out. They're gone. There's video online, I guess, of people dismantling the dressing rooms.
And you only sell one. I mean, that's a bad business model to begin with, but apparently they've done something to draw interest in the market.
Speaking of taking your clothes off.
Whoa.
I came across this post, an influencer, and I hate that word, posted this, with a photo of their neighbor. Picture a very fit, probably 65-year-old man pushing a push mower across the street from where you live. That's what the photo was.
Okay. Okay.
And they write, so apparently I'm the bad guy for saying this, but here we go. My neighbor was out mowing his lawn, completely shirtless in the middle of the afternoon, right in a residential neighborhood.
It's tough to be half shirtless.
Where families, kids, and neighbors are constantly walking by. Now, before everyone jumps in with it's his property or it's hot outside, when did basic standards and common decency become controversial? This isn't a beach. It isn't a pool. This isn't a gym. It's a neighborhood. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I was raised to believe that when you live around other people, you show a little respect for the community. Throwing on a t-shirt doesn't seem like some impossible burden. Some neighbors laughed and said I was overreacting. Others agreed that certain things just don't belong in a family neighborhood. He wasn't pantsless. So I'm curious, am I being unreasonable here?
Yes.
Or have we completely lowered the bar for what's considered appropriate in public these days? We lowered that bar a long time. Apparently that person's never been on an airplane.
I take issue with the in public comment. He's on his own property. Look away, Janice.
In the words of Chicago, look away.
I mow the lawn in short shorts, shirtless, and cowboy boots.
Oh, wow,
Sam. It is a sight to see.
You do you.
And if you want to look and be offended.
YMCA?
Oh, every time. If you want to be offended, whatever. I'm mowing my lawn.
We wrap with this today. Kansas City has advanced a plan for the symphony's new 4,600-person music venue near the Plaza Library. And before you go, oh, my gosh, what about the Kauffman Center? The symphony's home would remain at the Kauffman Center, but they are proposing building an indoor 4,600-person music venue at 49th and Main on a vacant lot near the Plaza Library branch so that more people can enjoy different types of shows. City Council will have a final say at a later date. It's a project they have been pursuing now for quite some time. They call the location ideal and say the venue would provide a much-needed anchor to the Country Club Plaza District and South Plaza area. We went to the Kauffman Center as a surprise for me last week and saw the symphony with four female vocalists playing almost the entire Taylor Swift catalog. It was one of the most outstanding evenings of my life.
Nice.
If you have never seen the symphony, my God.
Worth it?
It was incredible.
Okay.
Absolutely incredible.
I have heard from some folks who are frequent flyers of the KC Symphony that the newer location is going to bring in some more contemporary stuff.
Sure.
You know, they're doing the whole, we'll play the score of movies
and
whatnot.
Well, they do Star Wars. They do Jaws.
And so, again, this is just their commentary. This is not from the Kauffman Center. They're looking to kind of expand their options, and they can do so at a less... I don't know how to put it. Hoity-toity feeling.
Yeah, maybe
venue.
More everybody.
Yeah.
They actually asked that night, raise your hand or clap if you're. This is the first time you've been to the symphony. And about half the people clapped. So I'm telling you, my God, go.
Yeah.
Go, go, go.
Bringing more people to the arts.
Today is Go Fishing Day. It is National Cheesemakers Day. And it's International Panic Day. But please don't do that behind the wheel. Sir Paul McCartney, 84 years old, and they do list him as, quote, legendary English singer-songwriter and member of the Beatles. Thanks for that. We leave you with Ray LaMontagne, one of my favorites. Oh, I love his song. He is 53. 3 years old today. Have a great night, everybody. On behalf of Sam Stevie, myself, Dan Weinbaum, we will be back here tomorrow, and we will air the grievances. We will be working tomorrow.
Promptly at 5 o'clock.
If you're not, enjoy your day off. Be safe, be good, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.